Okay, welcome everyone to Paella meditation session number 3.
You cannot say that seriously.
I just said it very seriously. Didn't I say it seriously?
Yeah, that's
fine. Okay. I'm allowed to smile.
Paella here. As in the dish.
Oh, okay, paella.
Just a little motivator for our meditation session.
Ah, food.
Yeah. It works with me.
Okay, so you haven't been here before, so I'll try to explain everything as I go along.
It's okay. I live in a Buddhist community anyway in the UK, so I meditate all the time, so don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay. So then we'll start out with some pranayama, and we usually do the Wim Hof method. Which is everybody cool with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Okay. So 30 breaths in and out, 30 breaths, deep belly breaths.
Yeah. I may not do the deep stuff, but
sure,
that's okay. Yeah.
It's fine. As you like.
Yeah.
Whatever you're comfortable with. And then at the end of the 30 breaths, you hold the last breath out as long as you can. You breathe out, last breath, hold as long as you can, and then breathe in, hold for 20 seconds, and then let go. And that's one round. So, is that?
I'm not very good with the Wim Hof method, so I kind of will, I'll just.
You can just do.
I can do my thing.
So. Okay, sure, great, okay.
Do we do 3 rounds normally, or
yeah.
3?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm from Holland, but I'm not such a big fan. So I think it's easier.
Yeah, take it easy, as you like. Yeah,
some dishes sometimes.
Yeah, me too. I like it.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
As you like. Okay. Here we go. Let's do it. if you're already finished, just do some deep belly breaths, slow. And easy. Okay, now just relax your whole body. Let go of anything you're holding on to. And bring up something that you want to be free from. It could be a pain in the body, or an event, or a strong emotion, or a trauma. Just bring that to mind. Just choose one thing for now. And if it's something other than an emotion, find the emotional component that goes with it, that it's connected to. And feel it in the body. And just let it come up and be there as it wants to do. You can see if it has a form or a texture. You can see if it's heavy or light or dense, contracted or expanded. Just really be curious about it. What is there? Is it warm or cold? Is it moving? Or still. can you let it just be as it is without trying to change it or control it, without trying to push it away or pull it towards you? Can you just observe it as it is, as it wants to be? This emotion or sensation in the body. And then breathe slowly into that sensation. In a very relaxed and easy way. And really feel it as you breathe into it. And breathe into it more. And more. And more. And more. And I'm going to go through some questions. You can just answer yes or no silently to yourself. Either yes or no is perfectly fine. So, if you had the power to, could you let it go? Or just could you decide to let it go? To let it dissolve? And if you could decide, would you let it go? And if you would let it go, when would you let it go? Tomorrow, next week, next month, 5 years from now, or right now? And just feel what's there remaining. And remember, it's just a decision. There's no effort involved in letting go. It's just a decision. So whatever is there, that you want to let go of, could you decide to let it go? Would you decide to let it go? When? And see whatever's still remaining, whatever sensation in the body or emotion. And let it come up and be there. And also welcome up any sense of wanting to do something about it, to control it in some way, or to get rid of it. Just welcome that up as well, that desire. And then welcome up also any sense that is personal to you, that it's about you or your life or your story. Could you let all of that go? Would you let it go? When would you let it go? Now see if you can find the one who feels that emotion or that sensation. Who is the one who feels? Not intellectually, but holistically. Who is that one who has the emotion or the problem? Just let it be a question mark, not something to try to figure out. But can you go into that question mark, that inquiry? Who is the one who wants to be free from whatever it is that you want to be free from? Is there actually someone there who wants to be free? Or is it just a thought? Now let go of the question. And just be what you are. And if thoughts come up, that's fine. Just let them be there. You don't have to focus on them. You can just focus on being. What does it feel like to just be and not do? What happens to the mind when you're just being what you are? Thank you. And if it helps to focus on the breath, to stay present, you can do that. You can give it like 25% of your attention to anchor you in the body. While remaining aware of your beingness. You can say I am, or I am I, or I exist, if that helps you, to yourself. And let that mantra dissolve into the awareness. whatever is happening. You don't need to engage with. You can just be the observer of whatever it is. And we can learn how to discern between being the observer and being the doer, or being engaged with whatever comes up, whether it's a sound or a thought or a sensation. Or an emotion. We can just be the observer very simply. And just let it be as it is. What's the difference between the two? Between engaging and observing. Between being involved in the world or stepping back from it and letting it flow through you. Okay, so let's dedicate this practice to someone or to all beings. Just give it away without them knowing. And slowly wiggle your fingers and toes, and at your own pace, slowly open your eyes and come back into the room. One of my teachers once said, samsara. Does everybody know what I mean by that? The cycle of suffering. Samsara is nothing more than having something to do. I really like that because it simplifies things. So what does doing have to do with the cycle of suffering then? Why is it that doing or having something to do equals the cycle of suffering? Anybody want to go into that?
Doing some things, of course, try to satisfy yourself. So,
what's that?
Doing something is satisfying yourself. So, yeah. Generally, it's kind of fooling yourself in a way.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
If you're not satisfied, you probably can do by doing something anyway. So.
Okay. If you're not satisfied, can you say that again?
Yeah, if you're in the base from yourself, not satisfied, then you can do all kind of things, but...
To try to
yeah.
become satisfied.
But doing it will not bring what you want.
It won't bring it, yeah, it won't bring it about. Right. Uh-huh.
Sorry, could you say the question again?
What does doership...
Doership.
Or having something to do...
Mm-hmm.
have to do with suffering? Why does doership imply suffering?
Does it imply suffering? Is that the question you're asking?
Well,
doing anything you
mean? I'm saying, I'm making a statement that it implies it. So, why is that? If it is the case, and if it's not, then I'd be curious to know why it's not the case.
So the acts of doing makes us suffer, yeah? So I'm just trying to...
More or less, yeah, more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Instead of being. So there's doing, and there's being. There's a distinction there.
Mm-hmm.
when we're in meditation, we're not doing, are we doing anything in meditation? Hopefully not. Mm-hmm. So, what is the difference, and why is that important? Maybe it's not important to you, but
yeah, it is.
What is that distinction? Why is there a distinction, and what is the connection there between?
Wouldn't it imply that if you're doing something without being aware, that's where suffering comes from? But if you are aware, you're probably not. So,
right.
So does it have to be really the opposite, one or the other? Or does it depend on the condition of being aware or not? That's my doubt, since you asked that. Mm. Because I understand what is the being and what is the doing, and how those words can mean,
right.
But at the same time I thought immediately, but depends on what is the doing you're doing, because if you are present in doing that, you're being.
Right. Right, absolutely. Yeah, very good point. However, the statement was samsara is nothing more than having something to do, and having something
to do
is I need to do this.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a I don't know I don't know what you call it. It's a obligation. It's an impulse that we all have, right? We follow these impulses of having something to do. I have this, and this I need to get done today so I can blah, 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 blah.
Is it because if it was instinctive and if it was intuition working on you, you would not be saying, I have to go and do this. You would just get up and do it.
Exactly.
Is that it?
Exactly. But why does doership or having something to do make one suffer?
Because it's personhood.
Right.
And personhood will make you suffer.
Right, exactly, yeah. I mean, that's one way of putting it. There are other ways of putting it.
Does it depend on what you're doing?
No, just having something.
And the mind that you're doing.
It's a desire to want to get something, right?
It's an obligation.
But it could be just because you want to generate a better mind. So how would that...
That's also leads to suffering. So there's a distinction between being and doing, right? So we've kind of established that already. Any wanting to change what you are is doership. It's having something to do. Now I have a project, I want to meditate in order to improve my mind, for instance. Right? So there's a desire there. I'm not saying it's a bad desire. It's a very good desire. If you're going to desire something, that's probably a really, like, among the top best ones that you could desire. However, then you are coming from separation consciousness, and meditation is devoid of separation consciousness. It's not me trying to get anywhere or do anything.
Is that
or change what
result,
I am?
Though? Is
Sorry?
Not the being the result of doing to what we so the way that you were teaching, we're having to do something, yeah? So when you're guiding us and we're trying to get our mind to being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rather than is it possible just to kind of arrive at being? Straight away.
Yes, it is, I think, with practice. Yeah, absolutely.
You want to practice.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying desire is bad. Just let me back up here. Desire is not bad. We all have it. It's all part of us. And we can make... we can have conscious desires and unconscious desires, right? So, however, this impulse to constantly be doing something we don't, most of the time, I think we probably don't even know why we're doing it. Why are we doing all these things? Well, we can say, I'm doing them to, because I need to be more secure in some way, or just because I want to be, live my life this way or something. But then why do you want to live your life that way? What is the ultimate desire that you really want? Right? What is that ultimate desire? What does everything funnel into? What is that ultimate desire?
Peace.
Wholeness.
Right.
Yeah, because for me it implies what you've been saying, it implies like we're trying to attain something, and we're trying to attain that which is outside of ourselves, when in fact it's already here.
Right.
So.
Right. So doership is exactly that. Having something to do is trying to find that wholeness outside of ourselves. And that's why it leads to suffering, because it's false. It's not true. And what is not true, if you're believing in it, if you're following it, then that leads you to a dead end, always. And so I like this idea of be not the doer. And you can do this throughout your day. You can be not the doer as you're doing whatever. You can just be the observer, and you can practice this. And it's really good. It's a really great thing to practice.
You mean being present?
Yes,
okay.
Being present. It's kind of the same thing, but there's a little bit of a distinction, because you're just observing, so you're not engaged with what's happening, including whatever your body is doing. It just moves on its own. And you don't have to engage with the body as it's moving. You don't have to, you can just observe it. And you can observe other people as part of it, and anything else that's in your perimeter. So then what happens when you do that? Might be interesting to find out. But it's the same thing that you're doing on the cushion if you're doing self-inquiry, I would argue. It's the same thing. Because self-inquiry is not outward inquiry, it's inward inquiry, right? It's self-inquiry. So
that self-inquiry then is being, is that what you're saying?
It's beingness, yeah, it's being, just being, yep. Self-inquiry is maybe better said an avenue to just being, because you're inquiring, you have an intention, you have a volition, you're inquiring, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Or where is my mind, or whatever it is that you're inquiring as part of that self-inquiry. That leads you to a big question mark. And it's the question mark that is the beingness. It leads you to a point where you can't, just the thoughts will drop away. Because the mind is realizing that it doesn't really exist the way that it thought it did. I guess you could say. So, kind of a hard thing to explain that. But that's the way I think about it anyway. So. Yeah. Anybody wanna have any questions about anything we did today? About the Sedona method, or self-inquiry, or anything?
I noticed this last time we did the Wim Hof, because I do it regularly, and I follow him, a YouTube thing, and it's a bit different. It takes a lot longer, it takes about 11 minutes. and it's 30 breaths, and then you hold with it out for a minute, and then you do 15 seconds recovery, and then you do the whole thing again, but this time you hold it for a minute and a half.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then the next time, the third time, you do it for a minute and a half as well. So it's kind of 11 minutes. So I find I'm like, you know, I can't get through the whole cycle.
Oh, I see.
No, it's okay. You know.
Yeah.
It would kill me.
Yeah, I used to try to time it, and now I'm just like, whatever, I'm just going to hold it as long as I can. But yeah, that's cool.
Well done, man.
Yeah.
Also, his breathing is much slower than what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
Yeah, it's not fast breathing, it's pretty... It's quite a lot slower.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I just thought to say.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know, we can, yeah, that's why I say do it at your own pace.
Yes, you want.
Mm. But yeah, that might be half the class then, so we can't really go through the whole 11 minutes, but yeah. Cool. Mm. The other thing I wanted to say is that I'm in the middle of doing a fast right now, and I'm just reminding myself how much it deepens the practice of meditation. And I just wanted to point that out to all of you in case you are wanting to be inspired to do a fast, or even better, a fasting retreat, which is super fun.
We're really selling it.
Oh my God, it's so fun.
How does that take shape, the fasting retreat?
Well,
a day,
I can't go through all the details, but you can do it. I would say you can start with one day.
Yeah.
All right, and you can end up with...
Well, no, I just wonder how you do it, because I fast as well with my tradition, but so I just wondered how you do it.
I do it totally through an intuitive... It's totally intuitive. Mm-hmm. So I just... it just occurs to me that I need to do a fast. So then I just stop eating, or I actually just kind of, it's like a tapered at the beginning. You just eat less, like for one day, you just have one meal, or you start drinking a lot of veggie juice or whatever. And then on the third day, you're only liquids.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is all vegetable liquids, vegetable juice,
mm-hmm.
nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go for a while, and then I'll maybe 3 or 4 days or a week later, I'll start eating slowly. You can grate carrots.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. Mm-hmm. And just eat a small amount, and then eat larger amounts, still raw.
Yeah, yeah.
Not cooked, but raw. And then eventually get back up to where you're eating however many meals you normally eat a day. And in a retreat setting, it also gives you something to do to make your juice. It can, you know, but it's very, in my experience, good way to deepen your practice very fast. Especially if you're doing your meditations as you're fasting in a retreat setting where no one's bothering you. You don't have to think about anything that's outside of your retreat barrier.
That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can, and what we do in our, in my past tradition of Buddhism, is you set up an actual boundary, you go walk around the, and you We used to say the heart.
Which tradition were you with?
The Gelug tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. And they recite the Heart Sutra as they go around, and they give offerings to the pretas, the hungry ghosts, and the beings that are on the land.
Yeah, same with mine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and they just kind of set the intention where, please, you know, you're asking these beings that are already there on the land to protect you, and that you need your space for this amount of time. And so everything is intentional. And then you set a schedule and you just follow your schedule as best you can. Sometimes you have to break it for whatever reason. But beforehand, you say, okay, you get everything, you buy all your veggies or whatever, you get your blender or your juicer and make sure you have enough of everything, and then you write out a schedule and you just follow that schedule every day. And that's it. And it's in my experience it's profound.
Was it actually called the Gelug tradition?
Yeah, Gelug.
Or is that the name?
A person from the Gelug tradition is called a Gelugpa.
Okay.
It's also called Gelugpa or Gelug.
Because I'm not familiar with that.
It's the Dalai Lama's tradition,
okay.
Or the yellow hats.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah. That's about all I have.
I thought you were just about to say, I'd like to offer to host a fasting retreat. Was I going to go,
oh,
really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so I normally do a solitary fasting retreat. A group fasting retreat, that'd be interesting. Wow.
I think I would need that personally. I mean, we've talked about being Vata. So when I hear you, who's Vata, telling me that you eat only raw, I'm like...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe at this time of year, as we go into summer, I could manage a bit of raw, but...
Definitely a seasonal thing. Yeah.
Really.
Springtime when it's warm, and if it gets cold, I just bundle up and sit in bed, you know.
Okay.
And
eat meat.
Sorry?
And eat meat.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that too. I don't know. a carnivore retreat. I guess my main point is that when you come to the other side of that retreat, you will let go of a lot of emotional baggage that you didn't know you had. It will just come up. It pours out of you when you're fasting. It literally is like everything is coming up and you're purifying so fast. And when you're on the other side of it, it's like, oh my God, like things are not how I thought they were. And you're looking at things and it's like, oh my God, like I never saw that, you know, plants and things.
Yeah.
Just, it's remarkable. You have a different awareness, a deeper knowledge and awareness of what is happening all around you.
Just letting go of the self, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like identifying with this.
Yeah. So, and there's a connection that we all have to food because a lot of us are addicted to food or different kinds of food. And so you have to face this addiction because it comes up very strongly, especially if you haven't done a lot of fasting before. It comes up very strongly and then you have to deal with it. So that's why it's great to be in retreat, because you can deal with it on your own and let it go as you want to do, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a thing with binge eating in my lifetime, and I did, with our tradition, we used to do like 3 month silent retreat.
Yeah.
And I found that during that, we didn't have like fasting, but I found that my palate, the food was all kind of, there was no black foods in it, you know, so no garlic and no onion and stuff like that.
Sure.
And no sugar.
Sure.
So what happened, I found, and this has never happened to me before, I mean since, to be quite honest, because I haven't done them since, but my desire for food just went. I'd never experienced that before in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
So it literally became like medicine for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that in itself was just so liberating.
Right.
And like you said, it really, I wouldn't say it necessarily helped with my meditation practice. Helped me to sit. I mean, I was able to sit still without pain. You know, I've got arthritis in my body as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I get it. I get it completely about the food thing and going and fasting in retreats.
Yeah.
It's very powerful to let go of that attachment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's all consuming, isn't it? It's like we're thinking about food, it's like buying it, preparing it, eating it, you know, then clearing up.
Yeah.
You know, and why there's a big social thing about that, and I get it, you know, which is great, rather than just sitting alone and eating.
Yeah.
But, which I've done that as well for many years. Like you said, we're just so attached to it.
The first time I fasted, I thought I was going to die. I literally thought I was going to die.
You came back.
It just started. I could not get out of this. Oh my God, I'm going to die.
Yeah. It feels like that sometimes.
Yeah. But the last time I fasted, I never done so many days. It was only 5. And it was in a group setting. I like the group setting. I think it gives, I mean, with space to be on your own, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's good. But yeah. I remember just walking from a place to another. It's mindfulness all the time because you're so weak and you're so you really are in your body and you really are in that moment.
Yeah.
Because what you take for granted, like, oh, I need to go for a week, you know, and you just go and you're not even thinking. You're thinking about 100 things until you go there and while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, it was just like getting out of the tent, getting up, standing, walking, the colors, amazing. And it was just that. It does the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was not even meditating on purpose. I was just,
yeah.
The whole day was an experience. You know?
Being, I suppose.
Yeah.
That was a meditation.
And the colors of everything. That was on the third day. It was like, wow. Everything was like really just showing itself to you, like just
new and shiny and fresh.
It was beautiful.
Amazing, yeah.
And then only when I decided, okay, tomorrow they come and pick me up, it's gonna stop. That night was awful. It was the only night. It was like torture. I dreamt about pizza the whole night. It was like, I was waking up and thinking, I'm going to eat a pizza. But they're saying I shouldn't. They're saying I have to eat raw vegetables on Sundays. Oh my God. It was torture, but only the last night. And I know it's just because I started thinking in a different way. I was not there anymore. I was already...
In the future.
Oh.
Yeah, in the kitchen.
In the future. I mean.
In the future.
And the way in the kitchen, in the future in the kitchen.
In the future kitchen.
Yeah.
It's just that having to cook, it's really hell when you're doing that. And I have to cook every day. But I'll sort it out.
You can do fasts, maybe we talked about this, but you can do fasts that involve carbs, which gives you a lot more energy, such as the one they call just drop the name, the Master Cleanse. So the Master Cleanse is lemon juice, cayenne pepper.
Oh, I did that.
And
many years ago, and the sap.
Mm-hmm. And the sap, yeah.
Yeah.
The
sap. Syrup, maple syrup.
Syrup, yes, in a liter and a half bottle. I did that for 9 days, many years ago.
Okay, so you know what it's like.
Yeah.
And you have to drink salt water in the morning to flush out your entire system.
But, you know, I didn't want to eat. I was fine with not eating. I just wanted a cigarette.
Right.
You know, only on day 5,
right.
I stopped wanting my cigarettes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, I was fine with not eating.
Okay.
I'm curious, because that was many years ago, and I haven't done a fast since.
Yeah.
How that would be now.
Yeah, you can do it. I mean, if you know, I've done that one, I did it for like 11 days and I had a lot of energy to do stuff.
Me too. I was living in the city, having my normal life.
Yeah. And also, if you drink bentonite clay, also known as zeolite, and psyllium husks together, you mix them together with water, with a bunch of water, you drink that.
That's the clay, isn't it? Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You drink that two or three times a day between meals, an hour before and after.
Mm-hmm.
That will reduce the pain by probably 80%.
The pain of fast,
you have a cleansing reaction, they call it a Herxheimer effect.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you have a cleansing reaction, which is painful, literally painful.
The headaches and so on.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah, for me, it's like from the here.
Okay. But when you say between meals, there aren't any meals, so what do you mean?
Between juices. I call them meals, just to give it a,
it's just a psychological
like, my meal, I'm going to eat a meal.
Let's flip one in.
Well, speaking about meals, I have to go and cook dinner for my children, and that's
fantastic. Yeah, we're past time, So, all right.
Mm. Oh.
Thank you all.
Nice
for
you.
Coming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hope to see you next time.